Welcome to the Intertidal Talks podcast. I am Kendra, marine biologist and your host. This podcast is meant to teach, inform, and entertain you about all things marine science and conservation. If you are a marine scientist or advocate with a story to share, you can contact me at intertidaltalks@gmail.com. Want to join our marine science community? Join us at patreon.com/kendi_marinebio. And hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Intertidal Talks. I'm really excited to be talking to a fisheries biologist today, Emily D'Souza. Did I say that right?
Pretty close. Emily D'Souza.
Okay, Souza. We're going to just chat about her career and then get into the new documentary, Seaspiracy. So how about you introduce yourself, where you are, or where you're from, and what you're doing, and how you got there?
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me. Firstly, I'm super excited to be here. I love talking about anything related to seafood and the ocean. And I love the opportunity to chat a little bit more about what I do. So my name's Emily. I'm actually a fisheries social scientist. I've been talking a lot today. I'm a fisheries social scientist. And I'm based in Niagara, Ontario right now. And I'm actually finishing up my master's at the University of Guelph. And so my degree is technically in geography, but basically I'm a social scientist and I'm looking at seafood value chains in North America. Specifically, I'm looking at direct to consumer models like community supported fisheries and trying to understand, you know, what motivates people to those sort of like smaller scale models and what challenges they face in trying to run their seafood businesses.
That's really cool. So so you're currently getting a master's?
Yeah.
So like what's your education background before that and maybe what led you into this field?
Yeah. So I also did my undergrad degree at the University of Guelph. And I was studying environmental governance. So it was kind of a mix of like geography, policy, and economics. And I really liked that sort of like interdisciplinary program. I felt like I got like a more, I don't know, holistic picture of environmental issues. I've also never been into like biology or chemistry. I was never good at that stuff, or math. And so social science just worked for me. And I've always been interested in the oceans. So my family is from the Azores Islands off of Portugal. So I attribute like a lot of my love and passion for the oceans to that. I was actually like born and raised in Canada. But you know, whenever we could travel, I just loved like being in the water and being around the ocean. And I would always like read books and watch documentaries about the ocean and was like so eager to learn so much more. And so even throughout my undergrad, like my program was broadly on environmental policy kind of stuff, but I would always try to bring like marine issues into it and look at like marine policy and look at ocean conservation through a policy lens. And then I became a scuba diver, I guess when I was 17 or 18. And I feel like that was sort of like, I feel like this is the case for a lot of people. Like this is definitely not a unique story. Like once I like saw, the ocean, what was going on below the surface for myself, that was like what solidified it in my mind that this is like what I wanted to dedicate my career to doing. And dedicating my life to like protecting the oceans and making sure that we were using their resources sustainably. And so while I was in my undergrad, I was volunteering for a marine conservation organization. I'll just say it. I was volunteering with Sea Shepherd and had a good experience up until this point. But basically I was volunteering with that organization. And at the same time, I was also like super involved in a lot of sustainability stuff on campus. And it just so happened that like one day I was hosting an event with Sea Shepherd that was a film screening of one of their movies. I honestly don't even remember which one it was. And then the next day I was hosting an event on campus in partnership with Oceanwise. And it was like a sustainable seafood chowder chowdown event. So it was like a really cool event that I was like super proud of. We had all these local chefs come in and make like basically create their own unique seafood chowders using sustainable seafood products. And we had representatives from Oceanwise there. And we had this whole panel about sustainable seafood consumption and sustainable fishing. And I guess somebody from Sea Shepherd heard about that and was basically, I was essentially kicked out of Sea Shepherd, long story short for that, because as I'm sure you're aware, Sea Shepherd's position is that there's no such thing as sustainable seafood or sustainable fishing. And so they basically didn't want to work with me anymore after that. And I feel like I always say this to people, like, I'm doing what I do today, like, strictly because I can hold a grudge, because I was like so upset that like that was their stance. And I was like, this, like, even at that age, I like knew, like, I was like, this is wrong. Like, coming from like a family that, you know, lives in islands and like relies on the ocean for food security and for livelihoods and like shipping and transportation, getting around, like, I knew what a large role the oceans played for people who live on islands. And I also knew the importance of seafood for the people who live on the islands. And then, you know, just even here in Canada, like, seafood is such a huge part of like our culture and our like religious holidays and stuff like that. And, you know, being Portuguese in Canada, like, we consume seafood on all of like the normal cultural and religious holidays that we would back in Portugal. And so for me, I couldn't like wrap my mind around it. And just like knowing, you know, the people that I knew who fished in these Ordos Islands and were doing it sustainably were small scale fishermen. They're largely like pole and line tuna fishermen out there who are like literally pulling fish out of the ocean one at a time. I just couldn't see it. I was like, I know that there is a way to do this sustainably. And the people that I know that fish and that work on the oceans and rely on the oceans for food and job security, they have no intention or motivation to destroy the oceans. Like, they are the greatest stewards of the ocean that I know. And so, yeah, basically I've like dedicated my career to proving that point wrong, I guess, and proving that you can eat seafood sustainably. And so that's what kind of led me to where I am today, doing my master's with Dr. Phil Loring, who also agrees the same thing, that, you know, like, seafood is part of a climate-friendly food system, and we need to find ways to definitely do it better, but we can do it better is the moral of the story, I guess.
Yeah, and I definitely feel like Sea Shepherd takes the approach of the animal rights aspect of seafood, which from that, like, I've toured one of their vessels. They've come to like San Diego, and I was at SeaWorld, and then we one morning we went to the park to go tour their vaquita vessel, because they'll basically come up from Mexico and dock for a few weeks to either get any new volunteers and just like settle, because like my family grew up like obsessed with Sea Shepherd. I didn't really understand ocean conservation, but we liked whale boars, and I wanted to like do that. And then as I broke into this field, I started to realize like how divisive their tactics are, and it's effective to a certain degree, and I can respect it as such, but I also don't, I've heard some things about things that they do behind the scenes that's really sketchy in terms of like taking other people's data, misrepresenting people, and just being really aggressive with how they handle a lot of topics where I think Madison was just talking in a clubhouse saying that collaboration is better and cooperating with each other rather than like attacking each other. And they definitely take that attacking method, which just is unsettling for me. And I think Paul Watson is very akin to like a Joe Exotic of the ocean world, less horrible in terms of he's not shooting tigers, obviously, but just, I feel it's just like a funny, someone said that and I was like, I can never get rid of that imagery. Yeah. But it's hard because I also like, I do like a lot of what they do as an organization, and some of their, it's obviously like some of their projects I don't like and some I really do. And it's like such a line to dance. And the fact that like they would kick someone out, like a volunteer, just because you can acknowledge without the ethics of eating seafood involved in terms of fish feel pain, fish are sentient, that argument that there is a sustainable way to source any kind of meat. Same goes for like terrestrial based, like cows and chickens and all that kind of stuff. There is a sustainable way. And I always say that the issue is that we're just so divided from the food on our plate that it's just become like factory farming, factory fishing is the problem, not eating meat, essentially. Yeah. And it is just kind of disappointing to see that they aren't willing to even keep a volunteer that just was going to an event and promoting a way to eat seafood sustainably. It's very disappointing as an organization to see that.
Yeah, it was honestly shocking. Like, I think back and I think like, yeah, like I agree with some of what they do, but there's a lot I don't agree with. But I think like if they had never kicked me out, like I probably would have continued to volunteer with them and like still continue to like do what I do with sustainable seafood as well, like, you know, with different organizations. But I was just so thrown off by it that they were like, no, like if you believe this, you're out. And I was like, oh, okay. Like,
okay, bye.
I guess. Yeah. I was like, I don't know what else to do. All right.
If it motivated you, then I'm kind of like, thank you. But it is like disappointing. It's hard to see that with any area. If that happened out here with the killer whale situation, I'd be extremely disappointed in whoever did it, just because it doesn't benefit anyone. Exactly, so I guess with that, we can kind of break into Seaspiracy. So just premiered, I stayed up and watched it like right at midnight, just cause I wanted to be ahead of it. And I want to know, I'm curious your immediate thoughts watching it, and then overall what you thought, and then maybe sharing before we get into critiquing, if you had any positive takeaways or things you maybe liked in the film, what those may have been.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I admittedly, like I tried to keep an open mind. I mean, I saw the trailer, like I saw that Paul Watson was in it, and I knew that it was produced with the same guy who did Cowspiracy. And so I was kind of like, I kind of already had an idea of like what to expect, but I was still, you know, trying to be hopeful and thought, you know, like maybe, I don't know, maybe I'll be wrong, I guess. So I tried to keep an open mind. Admittedly, like I don't know if I want to give too many spoilers if people haven't watched it yet, but like the first
go watch it before listening.
Yeah, we should put like a disclaimer and be like, there's spoilers ahead. Yeah. But like the first like 20 or so minutes or 30 minutes, like I was super confused. Like that was like my first impression. I was like, what is this movie? Like it just seemed like all over the place. And I was, because the impression I got from the trailer was that it was supposed to be about overfishing. And so I was like really confused that like they were starting with plastic pollution and then looking at the Taiji dolphin hunt and shark finning. And while those two things are like technically forms of fishing, I thought it was a really odd launching point for a discussion about overfishing. So I guess like my initial feeling was confusion. I thought it was really scattered. And then like, I still tried to be open-minded. I thought, okay, you know, clearly they're picking some extremes in the fishing industry. Like, cause those two topics, like the dolphin hunt and shark finning, like wouldn't have even come top of mind when I was thinking about like issues in commercial fishing. And so I thought, okay, clearly like they're starting at like a very specific end of the spectrum. And so, yeah, I guess that kind of just like was off-putting to begin with. I just thought it was like a weird place to start. And then throughout there was a lot of like numbers that were incorrect and things that were based off of like really, really outdated science or science that's been now retracted. But I guess before we get into that, I will say, in terms of positive, I thought that they did a really good job, or a decent job, maybe really good is too generous, a decent job of like portraying some of the human rights issues in fisheries. There's slavery and there's definitely like human rights abuses that occur in illegal fisheries and high seas fishing. I'm not going to sit here and say that, you know, fishing is perfect and, you know, everything is sustainable and everybody's treated properly. It's not the case. There are fisheries that are well managed and there are fisheries that aren't. But it was disappointing to see that they chose to focus on a very specific set of fisheries that were very poorly managed. And like I said, like kind of the most extreme. But I will give them that, you know, the human rights thing is real in fisheries and is definitely an area where a lot of people are working to combat and to address. And I think that, you know, one way that we can address that is by educating consumers about sustainable seafood and how to source sustainable seafood, because seafood that's sustainable does not come from slave labor or any sort of, you know, like abuse of workers or fishermen or deckhands or anything like that.
Yeah, I definitely agree with a lot there. And the numbers I already knew, I also went in very cautious. Mm-hmm. I knew like Sea Shepherd and Cowspiracy being the idea behind it. I mean, it had a very similar play out to Cowspiracy as well. Like I was doing my part and then I did research and found out I wasn't. And then I went and looked and I exposed two companies. And then at the end, I chose not to eat this thing. And so I knew that would be a very similar model. A lot of the numbers were things I've definitely seen. I have probably posted, I could look back through my posts and I probably shared a lot of the numbers. And That's where like we all need to be cautious of like citing things that we just Google. And then there were things I did like the attention to marine debris, a lot of it being fishing related, because I see a lot of that with what I did in Hawaii. That was a big, huge problem, but also so were the little things. And a lot of even fishing debris weren't necessarily nets. We'd find like fishing buckets and like baskets and hagfish traps and all that kind of stuff. But they were talking about nets, and then it went into bycatch. So I did like a little bit of a segue from, you know, plastic straws to nets, because I've touted that on my feed that your straw in a grand scheme of things is not the biggest player in plastic pollution. I like the initiative of, I'm not like using plastic straws, it's not an excuse, but just saying like, yeah, what you are eating, where if you like go on vacation more so than in the US where I was based, where fisheries are quite sustainable, that you don't know the impact maybe of what you're doing, but it applies to everything. And so I liked that, but overall I was like super wary, and then immediately looked at Oceana's Instagram and then Plastic Coalition. And then I was checking in with people I follow that are involved in fisheries. Like you, there were other organizations that are promoting ways to even turn shark fishermen into tuna fishermen. And I was very concerned for their projects that maybe this film would cause some sort of backlash, because they're promoting just trying to turn from a shark fishery to a sustainable tuna fishery. But this film definitely portrayed that no fish is sustainable, which I believe not to be true. And which is why I want to give light to a grander scheme of the fisheries industry and more nuance. So I guess going into it, I think first, maybe overall, would you say it's a good documentary?
No, I can't in good conscience say it. I can't. It was very like self-indulgent. Like it wasn't, it didn't even like highlight the issues. I thought like it was really quick. Like I said, it was really scattered. Like there was no attempt to actually like discuss a lot of these problems. Like I said, like the slavery bit, like that's a real thing. And like, frankly, like you could have done a whole documentary about that.
I think there is one on Water Bear that goes into it in full depth, which I'll probably suggest at the end if we have like alternate documentaries, we'll talk about that as well.
Cause yeah, like I thought like, I mean, like any environmental issue, like these are huge issues. They're complex. And like seafood is the most traded food commodity in the world. Like these are globalized massive supply chains. You can't explain it in 90 minutes. But in saying that, I don't think that's an excuse to like, oh, I only have 90 minutes, so I'm only going to cherry pick, you know, X, Y, and Z. This amount of footage.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it was basically.
Yeah. And I, at first I definitely liked that they covered so much, because I am often overwhelmed with all the different conservation issues. I've probably made a post about most of the things that was discussed in the film to some regard. And so I was like, oh my gosh, so many people are going to be exposed to this topic and maybe they'll hear it and go look into it. And that got me excited. But yeah, when you do just state everything and you can't go into one, the nuances of them, because each and everything he even mentioned, there's more nuance to into understanding that problem, that not every, like obviously everything is tied to fishing. And that was part of his point, was you can tie a lot of issues back to the fishing industry somewhere, but that doesn't mean that that is like a primary way that we can address that problem. But then I definitely saw like, we didn't go into depth, and that left out a lot for viewers to be empowered with. Cause I'm very much, I want to empower an audience with a solution or information rather than presenting my own necessarily.
Yeah.
So definitely, I definitely agree with that. And so now with more specifics, what, I guess, I don't even know where to start. I know I want to kind of want to start with the 2048 claim, because I have seen there's similar ones with like more plastic in the ocean than fish by 2050, something by 2030, something by 20, whatever. Like we see these numbers a lot. And the 2048 specifically has been refuted even by the scientists that put out that first paper. So can you talk more on that?
Yeah, this like, every time this statistic is quoted, like I said this on Twitter, like a part of a fisheries scientist's soul dies because it hurts to see this. So this like statistic that there is going to be like no fish in the ocean or all the fisheries are going to be overfished by 2048. That's based on a 2006 paper by Boris Worm. It's like Worm et al. It's him and a few authors. And he was, I believe, based in like Dalhousie, so Canada's East Coast. And he published this paper in 2006 that basically said that fisheries would collapse by 2048. And like a dozen other papers came out after that refuted that, saying that claim was incorrect and that wasn't true and the data sets were wrong. And so basically Boris Worm, who was first author on that 2006 paper, partnered with a lot of the authors who wrote, who refuted that initial paper, including Ray Hilborn, who's he's one of the top fishery scientists in the world. And they published a paper in 2009 that basically, yeah, like you just said, retracted that statement and showed that there actually is no downward trend in fisheries. It did show that it's true, like there will be some fisheries that are better managed than others. And some, you know, some will be very well managed and some will be at the point of being overfished. But this claim that like all fisheries are going to collapse by 2048 is, it's not true. It was retracted even by the initial author. And so it actually like blows my mind that, and I think this came up in a Clubhouse room today, like, does Netflix not fact check this? Like it's shocking.
Yeah, that did.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'm like, how did they let this? And like, I do get it to a certain extent. Like it's catchy like that, like, mm-hmm. especially for headlines. Like I think, George, whose last name fails me right now, the journalist who does a lot of like, writing, for The Guardian and stuff. And he wrote like a Guardian piece based off of that stat that like there was going to be no fish in the ocean by 2048. And like, I get it. It sounds catchy and people can like understand and digest that. And what it sounds nicer than like, oh, actually by 2048, some fisheries will be okay and some won't. Like that's not a headline that sells. And so I get why it's taken off, but it's frustrating that it's just so, it still continues like now, like 10 years later after the initial author retracted it, continues to be cited incorrectly like that. So
in a Clubhouse chat I was in yesterday as well, we were chatting about the the numbers, and someone brought up, they were like, I get when they're inaccurate, but part of me is also like, if it gets people to change, is it almost useful to sometimes inaccurately use it? Obviously it'll be PV for researchers, but I think we drew a comparison to Blackfish. That's like a film I know a lot about in terms of like debunking, and it was full of misrepresentation, but it got stuff done in terms of the captivity industry was hit and was made to make changes. And so even with the inaccuracies, is the effectiveness worth it in the end? I don't know if you have a thought on that with this specific statistic and even other things mentioned.
I think, I don't know that I agree with it. I think, I think like there needs to be some integrity in science and science communication, but I do see that point as well. And I think that had the solution or the suggested solution of this movie been different, if they were blowing up these statistics, and the idea was to encourage people to rethink where their seafood was coming from, or get to know their local fishermen, or find out what species are available in their area, or, you know, learn how to read seafood packaging, then, you know, maybe I think it would be less annoying. I don't know, because then at least you're encouraging consumers to think twice rather than, you know, just pushing your own agenda. But I don't know. I think there needs to be some like integrity in communicating that stuff. I feel like this happened like not too long ago with like Paul Nicklin. Like I think there was like one of his like polar bear photographs like was taken out of context, and that was his justification, was like, well, I showed this polar bear that was starving because of climate change, and people started to take climate change seriously. But then I think he found out that like that was actually like not the case. The polar bear was like starving because of other things not related to climate change, and so a lot of people were upset about that. But that was his thinking, was like, well, you know, I raised awareness about this issue and I got people to act. And so I think it's a slippery slope, I guess.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And it is something like I've thought about, and then it's hard to like say, because I want to have integrity when I talk about a paper and or if I'm sharing a statistic. But at the same time, like I have shared probably false statistics. I can't think of them off the top of my head, but I bet if someone took a look through my Instagram, there's probably mm-hmm. something, maybe even the 2048. That sounds familiar to me. And like, I grew as a researcher since then and as a critical thinker. And so I definitely have changed my approach to how I use that. But if that was effective and maybe getting someone from viewing that post to rethink, is it worth it? And that it's kind of hard. And I definitely agree that I'm not sure I fully agree with it either, especially maybe from a documentary film versus like mm-hmm. an Instagram post or whatnot, especially like the audience that is going to be consuming this, how many people will critically go and think and do an actual change rather than watch it and be sad mm-hmm. and then go get sushi 2 days later.
Yeah, exactly.
And so another thing I kind of wanted to ask, I've seen this talked about on other platforms and it made me change how I talk about fishing, but the terminology of overfishing, fishing to capacity, and how a lot of times these words are almost used synonymously, but they are not the same thing. Mm-hmm. If you kind of know about or have seen examples of that and kind of explaining the terminology of an overfished stock to a stock that may be getting close to a capacity of fishing.
Yeah. So my friend Max does such a way better job than I will at explaining this. But yeah, basically there's like fully fished and overfished are kind of like the two that were like being taken as the same thing. They don't mean the same thing. And so actually in the latest report, the SOFIA report, the state of the world's fisheries and aquaculture by the FAO, they actually like separate those terms now. And so before they used to like show this graph, like I'm sure anybody who like has looked at this graph will know it when they see it. It's like blue and orange. And basically like the old one used to show that like 90% of stocks were like, it looked like they were declining because they grouped overfished and fully fished together, which made it look like all of these stocks were on a downward trend. And in their latest report in 2020, which I'll definitely make sure to give you the link to, they separate those two words. And so there's actually like three sections of this graph now that show overfished, fully fished, and then sustainably managed. And that report actually showed that almost 80% of almost 80% of stocks landed today are being fished at biologically sustainable levels. And so it's just that nuance. And I mean, I get it, overfished, fully fished, like it's kind of complicated. Mm-hmm. But once you look at that like graph and you see the three terms broken up, you realize that like fully fished is like actually not the same as overfished, and that most of the fish being landed today is coming from biologically sustainable fish stocks.
Yeah. And yeah, I think I learned that from David Schiffman on Twitter. Mm-hmm. I think he has shared a lot about it, because I would definitely throw around those words synonymously and I did not know the difference. I mean, I wasn't learning about fisheries, and my professor did work with fisheries and specifically like genetics of marlin. And he has a lot of experience in that, and he would share stuff, and he was very much would kind of laugh at a lot of conservation topics brought up because he knew more than us, but he was just like, I don't want to go into it with a bunch of young kids. Yeah. And so I think a lot of people don't understand that. And I don't think I've explained it in a post, which I probably need to do, but I think a lot of listeners can really benefit from that and from understanding that there is like a very big difference in how even like we talk about fish stock with those mm-hmm. terminology. So thank you. And then what other maybe statistics that were maybe shown in graphics or whatnot may have been inaccurate or even said? Because I have some written down or that I saw and I was like, oh, I got to look into that. But mm-hmm. I have you here. So were there some that specifically like you have looked, I know you had your marine policy book out and mm-hmm. divulging into it to look into this film.
Yeah, I made a list actually of some of my qualms with the movie. It wasn't even the 2048 was a specific statistic that I was like, why in God's name are people still saying this? But like for the most part, it was kind of these like overarching themes that just kept being reinforced that are like not true. Like I think one of the first ones that happened early on in the movie was about fisheries observers. And I was like, I was blown away. Like I was yelling at my TV because I was like, this is not true. Like basically in the movie, they portray it as like fisheries observers are optional and that like people can just, you know, go to the dock and take their boat and go catch millions of fish and then come back and like no one asks questions and nobody has to be on the boat to make sure things are being done right and they can do whatever they want out there. In most countries, that is absolutely not the case. That is definitely not the case in Canada and the US. And I was just looking it up in the common fisheries policy for the European Union, because I think the fishery that they're talking about in the movie was based in Ireland. And so the common fisheries policy in the European Union and in Canada and the US, fisheries observers are mandatory. And so basically you need to have a person on the boat that is verifying basically how much you're catching, how you're catching it, and making sure that things are being done sustainably. There's also a lot of like electronic monitoring that's being used now, because like I was actually telling my boyfriend about fisheries observers and he was like, that's crazy. Like you actually have to have like a person like making sure that things are done properly. And like, I didn't actually think about like how it must sound to somebody who's not in the fisheries world, but I was like, yeah, I guess that is kind of weird, eh? And there has been like a lot of like research and like technology and development to have like electronic monitoring so that we don't have to have like people on board of vessels, especially like recently. I mean, this is kind of getting sidetracked, but because of COVID, like fisheries observers were like temporarily, they weren't mandatory for like a few months because, you know, the people were worried about virus spread and whatnot. But in Canada and the US and then in the common fisheries policy in the EU, like fisheries observers are mandatory. They have to be on the boat. Also like, people can't just like leave and go fishing. Like if you're like a commercial fishing vessel, like you have to have a license. You have to like prove that you have a license when you leave the dock. When you come back, you have to report what you're landing. I just thought that part of the movie was like so funny, because I was like, this is not how this works at all. Like everything needs to be like reported. There's observers. Like you can't just go fishing and come back and like hide like with millions of pounds of fish somehow. So I think that was like the first thing that I just thought was super, super weird. And then I was also disappointed that the movie reinforced this narrative that unfortunately is very common in marine conservation. And it was essentially painting, you know, like Asian people are bad and brown and black people suffer. They're the victims. And then, you know, white people are the saviors and we're going to help them by not eating seafood. That was super frustrating. And like I said, unfortunately, like that is a common narrative in the fisheries and in the marine space. And a lot of people are working to, you know, show that that's not the case at all. And that's like a really like racist thing to be like, I don't know, to be enforcing. And so I was just really disappointed to see like that narrative being reinforced on a platform as big as Netflix. And like, I don't know. I was just like, what's going through this guy's mind? Like, does he not see like that this is like really inappropriate? And they didn't interview like any minorities until the very end of the movie, until the slavery section, which I also thought was like, how can like, it's 2021. Like, how can this be representative of anything when all you're interviewing is white environmental activists who like, none of these people know what it's like to live in a coastal community. Like even Sylvia Earle was quoted in the documentary, and like, I love Sylvia Earle. I think she's like a really great icon for marine conservation, but for her to like sit there and like say, like, you have to stop eating seafood. It was really frustrating because like the seafood industry, like seafood is the main source of protein for 3 billion people on this planet. And like, I'm sure like everybody has heard that statistic a million times as well. But it also employs almost 60 million people. And the majority of those people are located in the global south. And a lot of them are women. And so for like white environmental activists to just sit here and be like, oh, the solution is that everybody has to stop eating seafood. It just seemed really out of touch. Yeah, I don't know how else to put that, but
I definitely feel that way. And I loathe the xenophobic approach to conservation. I've seen it, especially with the shark fishing and finning mm-hmm. industry, because I was with a shark organization and talked a lot about sharks on my platform, my friends' platforms. And I've seen just very awful comments. And I think someone made a comment the other day that was like, why did they put this out, especially now? And it has such a, I don't want to say anti-Asian narrative. I definitely don't know if, I don't even think he thinks about it. And that's part of the problem is I think maybe when reviewing a film, there needs to be more representation and whoever's reviewing it that,
yeah,
especially in this time, like even postponing it, we're seeing a rise in Asian hate crimes. And there are a lot of issues in like places like Hawaii. Like I have seen, Asians kind of be targeted verbally more so with rhetoric about the ocean and online and on. I've gotten into, I don't want to say fights on social media, but on posts about shark finning that I think Ocean shared once, not specifically pointing fingers, and but people were commenting like, oh, these stupid Chinese people, we need to just eradicate the Chinese fishing fleets because they're horrible. And I was kind of like, we're always like, we're part of the problem too. Shark fins are still legal in a lot of places in the US to import. So we have a driving factor. Obviously it's not publicized. You probably don't see a shark fin soup bowl on your walk down the street. So you don't think about it all the time, but we're not perfect. We're not a part of the solution in that regard. And then bycatch, like they brought up, is also something that kills sharks. And it is something that as a consumer, we can't just yell at other people. You should do more research into yourself. But a lot of people, once they see someone to like scapegoat their own guilt, it turns into that. And I went on Plastic Coalition's Instagram, like right after, and I've been like watching their comment sections because I was waiting for these hate comments to basically come in. And there was one that was basically 5 hours after the documentary premiered that said, start sinking Chinese fleets that are depopulating the oceans. If these countries aren't stopped soon, the oceans will be dead in 50 years. And I'm just like, you took nothing away from this. Except, ooh, bad Asia, which, which makes me upset because like Japan gets villainized for whaling and yet Norway also will whale and people don't even know. People know about the Faroe Islands, yes, but there's also, and there is such like a native tie to a lot of places with whaling. And we see that even with like native cultures here in Canada, beluga whales are still killed, but it's so sustainable. They use every single part of that animal. I have no issue with it. Other like cetacean biologists I know have no issue with it. And then when documentaries like this just villainize any form of killing, it is so like radicalizing and creates such like a hateful dialogue and it enables those people. And especially during this time in our lives with COVID, and there's already Asian hate going on, that I was kind of thinking, could we postpone this?
It was so tone deaf. Like, you're right. Like they must not be aware. And that's definitely part of the problem. Like, cause it was really shocking. Like the way they represented minorities, even women, like this was another like huge qualm that I had with the movie. Like I said, women are such a huge part of the seafood industry, and that was not talked about at all. I mean, none of the socioeconomic factors of the seafood industry were addressed at all, which is, again, problematic in itself. But like the way that women were portrayed in this movie was such a disservice. Like they interviewed one female scientist, Christina Hicks, who was like, she's brilliant, she's awesome. And she actually like posted on Twitter today saying like that she was disappointed with the way that she was portrayed, and
she wasn't even told, I think, that she wasn't going to be in it until like 2 days ago. Someone was like, you're in this movie.
She seemed like surprised by it. She's like, oh, I just found out my cameo. And I was like, that's crazy. And even Jackie from Plastic Pollution Coalition, she was just in a Clubhouse room saying that like her interview was also misinterpreted. I was like, this is, like, I thought that when I was watching the movie, like, surely these interviews are taken out of context, but to like see these women like actually come out and say like this was misinterpreted, this is not how I wanted to be portrayed. And like Jackie was saying, like she called to try to like follow up and they wouldn't let her. I was like,
yeah, they wouldn't let her preview it.
That's crazy. And it's, I was like
from a documentary standpoint, I wonder, like, it makes me question like every film now. And I was talking to another one of my friends who studies killer whales, and she was saying like, it makes a lot of researchers and people like professionals in this field want to second guess if they're ever invited to be filmed to talk, because you kind of never know. Like someone could come to you and they can always like feign support and it could be turned, and then they won't tell you they're going to put you in this film. I feel like there should be something that you maybe have to be told, transparency, that maybe a film has to release the full clip on like another site that people can go back to and look, and have some kind of transparency with films, because it's definitely a disservice to people. And we don't know how they were asking the questions.
Exactly.
Like what led up to it. And that I, of course it was shocking. It was like fun to watch someone get mad and expose this company. But it, I was also, I've like worked with Plastic Pollution Coalition. They've reposted a lot of my content. And I felt very bad because I think they're a good organization that brings a lot of awareness, no, not to the fishing aspect, but to pollution of microplastics in the ocean, in what we're eating, in salt, like, you know, all the new studies about microplastics. They talk about chemical pollution with plastics, which is super important, I think, and I like to talk about and learn about, that it's okay for a conservation group to have a lens on something else that isn't everything, because it can be draining.
Yeah, I think you said that in Clubhouse as well, and I was like, yes, like exactly, like you said, like they can't do everything, like that's not their job, and like they shouldn't have to address every single ocean issue. Like this is what they do, and like they do it well. Like don't yell at them for not doing something else. It's like
that you think they should do, and it's like everyone has a call to passion. Like someone may really just only want to talk about sharks and kind of can share something else, but they are, you can't have your hands in everything, or someone, killer whales or anything. It's so hard, and it is also so draining because so many different areas just feel hopeless, especially when false statistics are thrown around. And it's hard, and I definitely feel like that did a disservice to their corporations and then even to those women. And I liked seeing Jackie come in and talk, because I was already suspicious a little bit and wondering the full context and even how much these people are told before these films are premiered, especially after Christina had tweeted saying she had no idea. I was like, did no one know that they're going to be in this movie? I thought that maybe you kind of had to get like a waiver to put someone in a film. And maybe that's just I'm naive in that aspect. But I don't understand.
I was like, honestly, like I also don't understand how this world works, because like I know at one point in the documentary, they're like scrambling to get out of, I think it's like the tuna auction or something. And like, he flat out says like the police are after them because they don't have permits. And I was like, then how did you make this movie if you don't have permits?
Someone, I saw a really funny Twitter thread and she brought that up. She's like, they're filming out of permit. He admitted it. And we don't know where else they're filming. And part of it too was when they were interviewing the people who were kept on the fishing boats, that they had to like leave the country because they didn't have permits. And it definitely sets it up in a way that like, ooh, the country's evil and hiding it. And that does a disservice as well, because you should be getting permits. I understand like if you were going to not be approved of that permit, that there's a desire to not get that permit. Mm-hmm. There's also appropriate ways to have the discussion. I think there are a lot of other films that have been able to talk to and address this issue without, I feel like, oh, what's the word I'm thinking of? Not exposing, like kind of fulfilling your own gratification, create this very shocking narrative. And yeah, I saw that and I was just like, oh my, where else were you not getting permits? Where else are you kind of a little shady in this?
Exactly. Yeah. I thought, I got the same impression. Like they said it to be like, oh, like they're the bad guys, when it's like, and again, I don't know anything about the film industry, so maybe I'm wrong, but I was just like, I was like, why are you surprised they're chasing you out of there if you're legally not allowed to be there? I don't know. I thought it was the whole part.
It's a very weird Sea Shepherd approach to just do it and then ask. It's the beg, don't ask for permission, beg for forgiveness afterwards, that you get what you want. And then afterwards, it's easier to just say you're sorry.
Exactly.
Just have your fun beforehand. That's very much how Sea Shepherd is. I also saw someone else like kind of criticizing that they're praising the Sea Shepherd acts of sinking 13 boats.
Yes.
And that was one thing when I learned, I feel like, you know, you watch whale wars and you're like, yeah, get those like whaling ships. And especially when they encountered an active like whaling occurrence, you're very scarred and you're very sad. And of course that's now the enemy. And then like they got their own boat sank. So I feel like we're almost numb to this Sea Shepherd situation, but they have sunk 13 boats and they haven't killed anyone. I think they stated like no one's been harmed, but like,
I think they did. I think they recently, I think it, off the coast of Mexico. I think this was the first one, admittedly, but like, yeah, cause I saw that and I was like, oh Jesus Christ. Like, frankly, I was like surprised it took this long for it to like catch up with them. Like doing that.
They do some crazy things.
Yeah.
They're very dedicated.
Yeah, I think they did. Don't quote me on it though. Maybe
yeah, I'll check and I'll put something in the description of the episode, but they definitely do a lot of very radical things, and I find a bit of worry in praising the sinking of ships.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I find fault with just overly praising any conservation group, because it's okay that we could disagree and that there are different methods to get action done. There are groups that are very dedicated to petitions and lobbying, and then there are groups like Sea Shepherd that are hands-on, messy, mm-hmm. bloody work and getting, and maybe not violent, but like boarding vessels they aren't supposed to. And I am happy that in a lot of cases now they do work with the government,
mm-hmm.
and they're not skating around kind of doing their own vigilante work. And that is what they portrayed. So I like that in the film, it was one where they are working with the government, but they definitely have other situations where they don't do that.
Yeah, I agree. Like, clearly what they're doing is working in some instances. I think it's another one where it's a slippery slope.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like with Taiji, I think Dolphin Project has a really good approach to being cove monitors,
mm-hmm.
and being very respectful. They are involved with locals, with Japanese people, and very involved in not villainizing the Japanese people, and understanding that it is also on people in North America who drive the industry of captivity, and they very much try to shed that light. And I kind of wish they talked to Rick O'Berry. I feel like that could have been a good note to take.
Yeah.
Rick O'Berry's not perfect either. Dolphin Project isn't perfect either, but Sea Shepherd has also been involved in Taiji efforts, and they have kind of been seen as being a little sketchy, mm-hmm. in that area, and less respectful, and other things that I've been told in private that just makes me very wary when they post about the situation. And that Taiji and Dolphin Project are my preferred source on that topic.
Yeah.
Because of that, and even hearing other people in conservation, I'm just very wary, and that the film almost like glorifies that extreme act, which I think is slippery.
Yeah, it seems like the film was very much made for a specific audience, like for the people who I don't want to say like radical, but like they believe in those sort of radical methods to conservation. They, you know, the Sea Shepherd kind of folk, I guess. Like, I think that's who this film was made for. And I don't know, like I said, like some of what Sea Shepherd does works, I guess, in some cases, but I personally don't think that like this approach was the right one. I think I think it's going to do more harm than good, especially like I said, for like the millions of people who rely on seafood for food security and for livelihoods. It's damaging, and it's especially like it's frustrating, especially when what you're saying is based off of like incorrect facts, and a lot of these people will take that at face value and not question it because of the source, because they see folks like Sea Shepherd and Paul Watson in it. Like, they're not going to question if the oceans are going to run out of fish by 2048, and you know, is seafood really healthy? That was like another thing that I couldn't believe was said.
the pollution.
Just like,
it definitely varies. I mean, I've talked about pollution in cetaceans, especially, is kind of where I definitely know more about it, with PCB and persistent pollutants, persistent organic pollutants occurring in the blubber stores. And it happens. Mm-hmm. There's our population, the southern residents, and then a population in Scotland or somewhere in the UK that is also very heavily polluted in terms of PCB pollution. But there's also that PCBs have been banned in the US since the 70s because we found that it was harmful, and I can't speak to how accurate it was that they were saying every fish. Are there definitely more species, from my understanding, bioacclimating, so higher up, mm-hmm. more predatory species, it is more of a threat than smaller, but what is like your correction and your take on that fact they shared?
Yeah, I thought that was ridiculous. Like, so many studies, like so much research has been done into the health benefits of seafood. And yeah, like you're like exactly what you said, like that bioaccumulation, like that occurs at the top of the food chain in species that are huge, that like, if you're eating sustainable seafood, those aren't it. Like, you're not eating those fish anyway. And so it's really not a concern. Like, cause I get that question a lot with like microplastics, and that's exactly what I say. Like, that occurs, like that's a concern if you're eating like a massive shark, which like, if you're eating sustainable seafood, like that's not what you're going to be eating. And so I was like really surprised, like like, I thought, I mean, there was a lot that discredited them in this movie, but like, I thought that was just like crazy. Like they threw it in at the end, like, oh, by the way, seafood's also little, not like, healthy for you.
Toxic.
Yeah. I was like, what? I was
moving
like,
on.
Yeah. I was like, even people who like don't care about the environment or like don't know anything about conservation, like surely will know, like, that's not true. Like seafood and fish have been like, it's been said for like ever, like it's one of the healthiest proteins on the planet. Like it's got omega-3s, all these vitamins. Like there's a great researcher, Eddie Allison. I think he's at World Fish now, and he does a lot of work looking at the role of seafood for food security and for like poverty and malnutrition and addressing some of those issues specifically in the global South. But he talks a lot about like the issue. I mean, and this is like, I'm sure you know this as well, like the issue with food security is not that there's like not enough food, it's that people don't have access to like the right food or nutritious foods. And like seafood is like an abundant, like high quality nutritious protein that could solve a lot of like malnourishment problems in the global South and the areas where he works. And so like, and he does a lot of great research, like just showing like the health benefits of seafood. And so I was like, yeah, I thought like that was such a weird thing to just like pop in the end of the movie. I was like, what? Yeah, I don't know.
And with like plastic microplastic pollution in food, I definitely see there is like a growing concern, but I think people should know that the more we don't do something now, it will possibly become a bigger thing. It isn't that all of our fish are completely coated in plastic, and it definitely depends on what you're eating. And it isn't even just seafood that has plastic at this point. That's where it's kind of funny that that's brought up, that there are so many other foods that we eat. Like salt has been found of microplastics. Yeah. If you're heating stuff up in plastic, that's also risky. It's like, it was very much pinpointing that issue with fish and not even, and another thing was, I think they obviously show the grind, which was very graphic, and I cried because it was very sad for me. But one thing about the grind, I know a little bit more about it, but the meat of those pilot whales, and they don't just kill pilot whales, they also will kill common dolphins and bottlenose dolphins and whatever other species kind of pop up. They, doctors in the Faroe Islands have actually recommended a lot of times that women do not eat the meat because it is very much polluted, I think specifically with a very heavy mercury content. And that even then they suggest only eating it once a month. And that's a very big claim, that while it may be sustainable in terms of killing, that they are more managing, like these populations are healthy, it doesn't hurt that they're killing some, but that the fact that they aren't really consuming it at a certain rate and that they often waste and throw a lot of it out. That I was kind of surprised they didn't even bring that up. I'm kind of happy as well because they already did so much. But I was thinking like that would have been a stronger point to talk about bioacclimation and the issue of pollutants, especially when you did bring up whaling, that that's a point to make about whaling that you missed. And even with sharks, like eating shark fins, it's not just like they cut off the fins and float them down. It's a lot of shark species are heavily polluted as well. And I was kind of, I was a little shocked they didn't even bring that up. I was surprised. But you know, kind of happy at the end as well.
Yeah. I thought that whole last bit, with the whaling on those islands was really like, it seemed like just an opportunity to show really graphic footage. Like there was no substance to it. It was
very hard. And I did appreciate the conversation with the fisherman. Actually, I really liked what he had to say. Yeah. He was like, what is the difference? But people idolize these animals more. And you could say there's merit because cetaceans are very aware, very cognitive and all that kind of stuff. But he's like, you kill a chicken, I kill a whale. If I eat it, what is the problem? You waste so much food as well. And that can be made with, if they are wasting pilot whale meat, the waste, the food waste industry in the US and in first world countries is horrible. We waste so much food, and it's a huge drive in, it's a huge cause of even carbon emissions in landfill, like food waste that isn't properly composted. And that was just, I liked the fisherman aspect and that they didn't demonize the fisherman, but of course it was just very interesting. And I don't know, I definitely felt like it was very much to pull at the heartstrings at the end that I was crying because you're hearing the pilot whales calling out to each other, which was just very emotional when you really understand like the cetacean brain and how there is like a leading theory that with species like pilot whale, that their sense of self is within their entire pod. So it's kind of, and you're there with your family bleeding and dying, and it's heartbreaking, and it definitely felt like a little bit of a ploy.
Yeah.
And it was just so graphic.
It was really definitely they're jarring images. Like, that's what I thought. I thought this is really graphic. I agree. Also, I did like the interview with the fisherman, and I wish, like, I think that had that been done throughout the whole film, like, maybe I would have a different opinion of the film.
That was like where nuance was brought in, was where he was like, what's the deal? And the other interview I think I did really like was with the, I forget which, it was one of the, like, the dolphin, it was they talk about being dolphin safe, how he was kind of like, yeah, due to human nature, I technically cannot really guarantee you that no dolphin died, where he was like, technically, yes, but this is what we can do. Of course, they kind of, I don't think a lot of people took that away. They took away that, oh, everyone can be bribed and there's no one on the boats and it's awful and corrupt. And I'm kind of like, yeah, it's humans. What are you talking about? The same can be said for the conservation groups that aren't like transparent with their money and like telling you what they're doing that could just be all be going to pocket kind of a thing. It's human nature, honey. Yeah. I don't know if that's dark of my thought to go to.
it's totally true. Like, I think, yeah, it just seemed a lot of like people. Yeah. I don't know. In this movie, like
bribing,
people
had what was your villains. Thoughts on the bribing claim and about fisheries observers? It felt very villainizing of fisheries observers, which I have a friend who does it in the Ross Sea. So I was kind of like, I don't think she's getting bribed.
I know people who work as fisheries observers in Canada and the US, and I was a little bit upset with the way that they were portrayed as well, because like, that's a shitty job. Like, to be like quite honest, like it's a hard job. Like you're like, I mean, fishing's a hard job in general, but as an observer too, like that's how a lot of like young marine biologists, especially women too, like that's how they get their start in the industry.
Yeah.
And like, it's hard work, especially like as a woman, which was like another area, like, I guess they talked about the one female fisheries observer, but like, it's a difficult environment. Like DFO, like just came out with like a huge, like there was a really big story about Canadian fisheries observers and like the stuff that women have to deal with being on a boat with like a crew of like 12 men for like weeks at a time. Like, it's a hard job. And like, again, like you said, like it's, I don't know, you're dealing with humans, like, you know, like there's always going to be, I don't know. I think like people need to think people were just like looking for a villain, or they had a villain identified and they like put everything into it. But the way that they, I thought the way that they portrayed fisheries observers was really like, I mean, in addition to a lot of other things, was just inaccurate. And I felt like a disservice to them. Like, I feel like, and maybe it's because they had this like animal activist approach that I don't really, like, I don't really resonate with, but I felt like a lot of the human aspect was like taken out of this film. Like, they really didn't consider like the coastal communities who rely on seafood and fishing. They didn't like think about the fishermen, the fisheries observers, like, and thinking even beyond that, like the processing industry, like this industry employs a lot of people, not even just at the like harvesting level. And none of that was discussed. Like I said, all the socioeconomic factors were ignored. Like they didn't even talk about, like, they didn't even acknowledge small scale fisheries, sustenance fisheries. Like, it just, the human aspect was like completely gone. And like I said, maybe that was a symptom of like this having like the animal activist focus. Mm-hmm. But I just thought that was like crazy. Like, we are humans that like exist on this planet. I like get so frustrated. Like, I think Paul Watson said it, like the best way to like save the ocean or something is to leave it alone. And like, I get so annoyed with people who have this like mindset that like, we have to like leave nature alone. When like, we live on this planet and like, we need to like coexist is what we need to do. And we need to learn how to like live with it together. And like, you know, we can harvest resources sustainably, especially when they're resources that people need to survive. And like, we can intervene, like human intervention is good. If, you know, if we've done something in the past to like, you know, mess nature up, if we, if it's a better alternative for humans to intervene and like use technology or use resources to make that better, and the outcome will be better than just leaving it alone. I think this like leave nature alone narrative, I mean, that's a whole other can of worms that I'm like getting sidetracked by, but I think that people need to like realize that like, we are humans, we live on this planet, like we rely on these resources, and like, we need to like not leave it alone, but know how to like learn how to harvest them sustainably and coexist and in a sustainable way, I guess.
Yeah. Well, especially from a research perspective, like it's very hard to do research and just leave everything alone. There's only so much we can learn from from observational research that we do genetic studies with different animals. Like we go out on boats and collect whale poop and that some that, you know, doesn't glamorous. Sound appealing, but we've learned a lot about the diet structure of cetaceans from their poop. And, you know, that's getting all up in nature right there. And so I guess another thing I kind of brought up in a Clubhouse chat with you and I want to talk about more is I definitely worry the fallout of a film and how it will impact different levels of the fishing industry. I worry about local, small scale, and then even people on social media like yourself who are talking about fishing. You share tons of great resources on how to eat fish sustainably, how to be an empowered consumer and do your part that if you're gonna eat seafood, you can do it a right way. How have you seen anything of yet, either with yourself or with others, to kind of share and have a little bit of insight on?
Yeah. And admittedly, like that was not even something that I had considered it from the fisherman's standpoint. And I was thinking about, oh my God, like how is this going to hurt or impact, especially I work specifically with small scale fishermen. Like how is this fallout going to affect them? And I think I mentioned this in a Clubhouse room earlier. Like I work with a fisherman. She's young, like she's my age. She's like 25, based in San Diego. Her family, like they're all fishermen. She's a fourth generation fisherman. And like, that's what they do. Like that's their identity. They're small scale fishermen. They sell like sustainably at a dockside market. And she messaged me today to say like, firstly, she said like, she was so furious and upset with the film. Like she couldn't even finish watching it because like, it was just such like a gross misrepresentation of the industry. But that local restaurants in the area had started to contact her to ask if she would be willing, her and some other fishermen, to come in to their restaurant and basically like do a mini training with their servers. So that, because they were already, the restaurants were already getting like calls and emails from customers who had seen this film and were like angry, like again, at San Diego, so there's a lot of seafood restaurants. And so she was basically being recruited to like go to these restaurants and like train servers on like how to respond to these questions and like what was actually true and what was false. And like how to like respond to some of these concerns from customers. And that was, I think that's the first that I've heard so far, like from the fisherman side. And then like myself, like, I mean, I don't really pay attention to things, so I'm not that bothered by it, but like I have noticed like I've gained a lot of followers, which has been like really cool. Partly thank you to you for sharing like about what I do and Sarah from Girls at Scuba. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. Like more people are interested in learning about this. And then I did get some like not so kind messages on Twitter and Facebook mostly. People like accusing me of being like paid by the fishing industry and having ulterior motives and like me profiting off of exploiting the marine environment and like not caring about the oceans and like nothing super aggressive, I guess, just like really crazy, like things like that. And like, yeah. I said, I think I've been like doing social media long enough that like I don't really care, but I do worry a lot about like, again, I work specifically with small scale fishermen. Like they're like families of fishing, like fishing families who like, I think I said this in another Clubhouse room earlier, like fishermen are not getting rich. Like these guys are fishing to survive and feed their families and do it because they love it. And like, I think this is another thing that was like totally like, I think a lot of people like forget. And I think in part, this has to do with being so detached from our food systems, but like fishermen are really proud of what they do. Like it's freaking awesome. Like they're feeding people, like they're feeding the world. Like that's a really like honorable job to have. Like it's really, and it's a risky job. That's another thing I will say, the documentary like did get that correct. Like fishing is a very dangerous job, but these men and women, like they go fishing and, you know, they do risk their lives and they're working in horrible conditions or working long hours. Like they're away from their families for weeks at a time. But they do this because like no sane person does this just because, and they're not getting rich off of it. They do it because they love it and because like it's an honorable profession and they are proud and, you know, feel like they're contributing to feeding the world and they really take pride in what they do. And so it's frustrating to see them like painted as bad guys when really they are like, they love the ocean. They like love their jobs. They want to feed the world. They want to like bring high quality protein to people. And sorry, that like got a little bit on a tangent.
But... No, that was good. No, and I just think, I feel like the only time I've ever seen social media backlash was about fishing. I don't want to say backlash because it was ridiculous, but it was definitely from the other side though. I don't know if you saw, it was the Fish Free February post I had done where I was just sharing like maybe use this month to not consume and do more research. that if you resume, because I don't eat seafood. I chose that like a couple years ago, mostly because it was very hard for me to just decide and figure out how sustainable it was. And I definitely just ate seafood as a very much a luxury item. And I was trying to go vegan anyway, because I liked the environmental impact that it had. And so I like let go of seafood, and I have fumbled. My mom has made dishes and been like, oh, I'm so sorry I put shrimp in it. And I was like, it's okay. Like I can either just not eat it or deal with it, because it's food and it's fine, but I don't go out of my way. And like, I would go to a vegan sushi place in Hawaii that was delicious, and it filled my craving. And just from, and everyone has a different definition of sustainable. And that's another part. Like technically the Hawaiian longline fishing is one of the most sustainable, but for some people, any kind of take, like any kind of false killer whale death is not sustainable. So they choose not to partake. And that's kind of my stance on it. And that's just me, however. And I totally understand that technically, yeah, that is sustainable. And from a science aspect, there's takes for us as well. When doing shark research, and if you're tagging a shark, sometimes the shark dies on the line, and that's a take, and you do like, that's part of it. And so I got a lot of backlash from a Fish Free February post from fishermen, but my intention was never to like tell people eating fish is bad. Because I definitely believe there is a sustainable way to do it. And I think that local fishermen are a great resource and a great way that you can for sure, like if you don't want to go buy it in a bag, wherever you are, that you can go to if you live coastal, go to a dock and find a fisherman. I know in Hawaii, that's how it worked. Like in Haleiwa Harbor, at the end of the day, there's fishermen that are just kind of selling their fish, and you can just go get it like straight off the boat. And I think that that's great. And I was very worried for like these people, for people like you online who are putting themselves out there speaking about that there is a logistical way and a sustainable way to consume fish if you're choosing to do so. And that was one of my big faults with the film, was that they didn't present it in a choice way, that there were other solutions as well, that there are truly sustainable fisheries, that there are well-managed fishing farms as well. And that one solution, and I'll ask you about sustainable fisheries, but one solution I think of, or one thing I've encouraged on my page with fishing nets and fishing net pollution, that we have so much of it, but it's a driving force in innovation, in finding a net that maybe isn't so impactful if it is discarded or just not discarding them at all, but that there's room for innovating. Fish farms may not be great now, but a biologist coming up maybe have a way to make it much better. And I obviously understand why they didn't put that in. They want people to go vegan and not eat fish at all. But I see that a narrative of innovation and new solutions is much more constructive. So what did you think of their, I think they have three solutions. They said it was no take zones in MPAs, no subsidies for fisheries, and then just don't eat seafood. And so what are kind of your thoughts on those three, or one in specific, or kind of just let me know.
Yeah, I mean, so obviously, I mean, I'll save the no seafood for last, I guess. The subsidies thing is a concern. It's not my specific area of expertise, so I won't speak to it too much, but like that is an issue. And there's a lot of like consolidation in the seafood industry, and a lot of like big business that like I myself also like see as problematic, because it hurts the small scale fishermen again that I work with. And so subsidies are mostly geared towards like those like big corporations and those like large scale fishing vessels that have like a lot of like corporate money behind them. And so it's problematic, but again, it's not my like area of expertise, and so I won't go into it too much. But I know that it is an issue that a lot of other people who do understand it far more than I do are working on. And then MPAs, I have a undecided opinion on, I guess. I think they are good, like MPAs and no take zones. I think they can be good. I think that there needs to be a lot more science and discussion about how their locations are decided. Yeah. Because I think, I think it's really problematic. I actually had a relationship. I spoke with a lot of people at the Hawaii Longline Association, and they were actually the ones who spoke to me a lot about MPAs and how it was becoming really problematic for them, because a lot of their like inshore fishing areas were being declared MPAs and were being closed to fishing, which was actually posing a huge risk to fishermen because, and they were having to go further out from shore to fish, which obviously, like, it takes longer to get there. They use more fuel. It's more expensive. It's like more like fuel intensive and carbon intensive in that way. And also it's just more dangerous, right? Like they have to go out further. Like there's worse conditions. It's a little bit riskier, especially with things like tuna too, which is like highly perishable, which is kind of another piece of it. But he was just saying that it was really problematic because they were being pushed so far from shore and that they were actually risking like being pushed all the way outside of the exclusive economic zone. And so he was actually fearful that like it would also have like an economic consequence as well. And that if they were pushed outside of the 200 nautical miles that, you know, like the state of Hawaii or the US government controls the waters of, that they, even though they're a sustainable fishery, like they would be fishing in the same areas now as like other vessels who, like, that's not the high seas, anybody can fish there. And so they were like worried that their like fishery would be like their fishery would basically get looped in with a lot of these like unsustainable practices that were happening on the high seas. And so admittedly, when you hear MPAs and you hear no take zones, you think, oh, that's great. Like we should protect the ocean and conserve it. And then when I heard him break it down like that and like break down the consequences and the implications for fishermen and like the risks that it posed, I thought like my mind was blown. I was like, wow, like I've never thought of that. And so that's why I say I'm like undecided. I think like there needs to be a little bit more I don't know, research and consultation about where exactly MPAs go, but I see why they are a solution.
Yeah, there's a big like conversation, like with highly migratory species, it's hard. Like, are we prioritizing a nursery? Are we prioritizing breeding grounds? Are we prioritizing when they're like what age kind of a thing? And it is more complicated than just a like yes or no. And then even like if they should be no take, should it be like a year off, a year fine or something like that, where it is no to maybe certain areas no take, but the rest of it, like they talked about and they criticized that some of it is able to be used. And and I was talking to someone else and I was like, even if they, like they act like MPAs aren't doing anything, but I've read a lot of studies showing how MPAs have increased biodiversity and help certain species bounce back. And so if they're doing that with some fishing still happening, that would be evident that you can manage an MPA and have fishing occurring and do such sustainably that does not harm that area, the biodiversity and that fishing stock. So I agree. And lastly, don't eat fish. So there's some ways to eat fish sustainably and something better to tell people even maybe.
Yeah, I think, I think this is like the fundamental problem with this documentary. Like it was just about getting people to stop eating fish. And I will say like, I'm not trying to like shove seafood down anybody's throat. Like I think that eating is deeply personal and people eat what they eat for a variety of different reasons, whether it's like health reasons or cultural reasons or religious reasons. And I don't think anybody has the right to tell people what their diet should be. Like, unless you are a doctor, like you should not be telling people what they should be eating. And so I have a fundamental issue with this, like mostly like vegan movement that like forces people or tries to force people and tell them that they have to like stop eating seafood or stop eating meat. I have a real issue with that. But it's also like factually incorrect in that the only way to save the oceans is to stop eating seafood. It's not true. You can eat seafood and you can save the oceans at the same time. Like, again, this is literally why I do what I do. And I get it. Like, I also understand like how you said earlier, like it's just easier to not eat seafood. I completely sympathize with that. There is a ton of information out there. There's a lot of misinformation and it's overwhelming. Like even for me, like I've been working in this world for years now and I still am overwhelmed by the amount of information out there, which is also why I do what I do. Like I try to disseminate this and make it easier for people to make sustainable seafood choices. And so you can eat seafood sustainably. I think the best way and the number one thing I would recommend is exactly what you said, like get to know your local fishermen. If you are fortunate enough to live in a coastal area, like you said, like go down to the dock and like have a conversation with these people. Like I said, they are so proud of what they do. And fishermen, like in my experience, are the greatest stewards of the ocean. Like they want to talk to you. They want to tell you like the story of like how they caught that fish, like what was happening in that moment, like what it felt like for them to pull that fish out of the water and like bring it to you right now. Like they will be able to tell you everything. And if you don't live near a coast and you can't replicate that experience, I don't live near a coast. The next best thing is to try to shorten the supply chain so you can get as close to your fishermen as you can, essentially. And so one way to do this is through community supported fisheries. So these are actually like the focus of my research. And so these are based, they're modeled after community supported agriculture. And so a lot of them are based off of like subscription models, or like membership subscription kind of thing. But they have a lot of different models now, especially since COVID, like a lot of people have moved to this like CSF direct marketing model. But essentially, like a community supported fishery is aiming to shorten the supply chain. And so they aim to have transparency from boat to plate, or from, you know, ocean, or there's like a million different fishy sayings. But basically the idea is that like your fish is completely traceable from the moment it's pulled out of the water to the moment it lands on your plate. And so like I'm part of a CSF called Skipperado that's actually based in BC. And they do a great job. Like, they're awesome. And their fishermen's face are literally like on their seafood products. So it tells who the fisherman is. So you know exactly who caught it. It says where they caught it, like the name of their boat. So like, you know, everything. And they're just a really great example of like a CSF that's passionate about transparency and connecting consumers with their fishermen. And then if you're not interested in joining a CSF, or there's not a CSF close to you, and you're buying like seafood at your local seafood counter, I always tell people to look for three things. So like the species, where it was caught, and how it was caught. And so I actually wrote like a PDF, like sustainable seafood guide, that outlines those like three principles, and some other tips about how to buy sustainable seafood. But essentially, like, if you know the species, then you can determine like if that species is endangered, or if like their fish stocks are at a healthy level. And then once you know that, you can look at where it was caught, because, you know, like different, you know, salmon is caught in different parts of the world. So sockeye salmon might be sustainably managed in one area, but not sustainably managed in another. So you want to know exactly like which geographic area it came from. And then finally, how it was caught. The movie, like, I think touched on this a little bit, that, you know, things like bottom trawling are very destructive fishing methods, whereas things like pole and line fishing, where you're literally pulling out one fish at a time, it's obviously not sustainable. And so usually you can find those three things out, ideally, in an ideal world, that information is on the package. It's not always the case, in which case I recommend people ask questions, talk to people. And I know, I get it, it's frustrating, it's annoying, you're in the grocery store, you just want to like get your stuff and leave. But if you really like are worried about, you know, making a sustainable seafood choice, I encourage people to ask questions at the fish counter. And if they can't tell you the answer, like, I wouldn't buy it, because if they don't know, then, you know, if they don't know, the person before them doesn't know. And then, you know, the whole supply chain is a little bit of a mess. And like I said, you know, seafood supply chains are globalized, they're messy, they're convoluted. And it's something that people like me are working to address and to increase transparency. And there's a lot of like research and like development being done on different technology for like QR codes and like DNA barcoding, and basically trying to make seafood more traceable and to increase that transparency. And I think like that's what we should be pushing for at like that like top level of sustainable seafood, comes down to transparency, like knowing exactly where that fish came from and how it came out of the water. I think is like the way to eat seafood sustainably. And I really think like that should have been the message of the documentary, that you don't need to stop eating seafood. You need to stop eating seafood that you don't know where it came from. Stop eating untraceable seafood. Stop, like, you know, stop buying things that you don't know where it came from. And I think, you know, somebody said this in Clubhouse today too, like seafood seems to be this like one thing where everybody is really critical about and wants to know like, oh, like, was this caught sustainably? Like, where did this come from? Which is good. But somebody, I think, had a really thought-provoking question about like, do you think this way about everything else that you eat? Like, are you?
I think it was Max.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So I know I had to do a paper on something like this for a natural resource management class. And he basically asked like, what was the last meal you ate? And I had it in front of me. It was like quinoa, avocado, tomato, and like this weird veggie patty that I had got from Costco. And I just threw it together because I was out all day and I was eating in class. And he had us draw a food web of our meal, our last meal or whatever I was currently eating. And then we had to look into the sustainability of everything. And everyone was like, Kendra's is the healthiest. Kendra's is most sustainable. And I actually was like, I probably doubt that, because I just bought random quinoa. And like, quinoa is actually becoming a very exploited grain, because it takes very particular conditions to grow. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot, like, there are a lot of ways you can consume quinoa very unsustainably. Same with chia seeds, and even your nut milks have more of an impact than a different kind of nut milk, and all exactly. that kind of stuff. That it was, he was, I think, trying to show, like, there is more complications than no eat meat, no eat seafood. Like,
yeah,
your grains are a big problem. And even there's a really great documentary that I really like, far better than Cowspiracy, called Sustainable, that talks about, it talks about the agriculture industry and how, yeah, industrial agriculture is a problem. Mass crops where we're like sucking up nutrients and just using like the same exact crops in every field, mm-hmm. and not having diversity is extremely, extremely detrimental. But that there are ways you can eat a cow and have be sustainable. It's also turning local. It's a very similar thing to what you just said. And I will always recommend that documentary over Cowspiracy. And I'll get commented where people are like, watch Cowspiracy, it's such a good documentary. I'm like, I've seen it and like, it's fine. But I much prefer a documentary that has a tangible solution for a wide variety of people.
Yeah.
Because going vegan's not. It's like, obviously some of us are very privileged and have that opportunity and have the means to do so and the willpower mm-hmm. to do so. Yeah. But that is not everyone, and that's okay. And it doesn't make them a bad person.
Exactly.
Basically. And
yeah.
That's my biggest issue was the end, was their solutions. I was like, okay, so a lot of people are going to watch this and just be like, oh, eh.
Yeah, no. Exactly. It could have been more like, yeah, more productive. I think like they could have said, you know, I don't know, ask questions about your seafood, or again, done, I don't know, just been more like solutions focused. Yeah, I guess. And like, just say like, oh, well, like there's like, yeah, I think he makes a comment. Like, I just don't see how we could ever like have sustainable seafood or fish sustainably. And I was like, this is,
I think it was at when he brought up that fish feel pain and fish have democratic
right
actions or something. And then he was like, we can't do it sustainably because they feel pain and fish are alive. And I was like, that's a completely different documentary. My dude. Talking about the ethics of killing an animal is completely separate. And and so I guess second to last, because I'll leave the last thing, but are there any books or resources that you would like recommend? I think the author of Four Fish was in the film. And I know I think I have that book on a marine biology book list. It talks about I think it shows an example of a fishery that was pushed to the limits, mm-hmm. and then how we can, I think it even is about a more sustainable approach to fishing, which is why I was kind of like, I haven't read it personally, but I have a lot of friends that have and they recommend it. But if there's like other books or like your own resource that I can leave down below that people can turn to either learn more about sustainable fishing or learn how they can eat fish sustainably.
Yeah. So like I said, I have my sustainable seafood guide that I can give you the link to leave down below. And it's like a free, like 30-page PDF. And I also have, that I'll send you the link for as well. Like I actually have a list of like fisheries and seafood books, that talk about how to eat seafood sustainably and like talk about some of like the past like fisheries crisis and stuff. And like there's a lot of great ones. Like I mentioned Ray Hilborn before, like he's one of the like biggest fisheries scientists. He has a book called Ocean Recovery, which is really great. And then Paul Greenberg has quite a few books, like The Omega Principle, I think like American Catch, and there's another great book called Eating the Ocean, which is by, like, she's not a fisheries scientist, she's a journalist. And there's also a book called Cod that I just started reading, which goes into the history of like cod, which like a lot of fishery scientists see like the 92 cod collapse as kind of being like the advent of sustainable seafood and when people started to like use the term sustainable seafood. And so it looks at the history of codfish and kind of what happened in that fisheries collapse and what's happened since. And there's another great book called Bottom Feeder that I will say, because that one's not on my Amazon list and the author escapes my memory right now, so I'll have to give it to you. But that one is a newer book, and is a really interesting look at like how to ethically and sustainably eat from the oceans. I kind of had I didn't agree with everything. And so I thought it was interesting because it made me think critically about a lot of stuff.
Yeah. And two films that I would also recommend looking at, and you can watch them for free on Water Bear, is The End of the Line, talks about sustainable fishing. And there's also Ghost Fleet, which goes way more into the human trafficking, human issue side of fishing, that they ghost over just that little bit. And it's a really good film. It's not one you can just put on in the background because it has lots of subtitles, because it's talking to, I believe, Indonesian men about enslaved fishermen. Okay. And a really good film. And both those are just two resources that I have watched and that I think are good at going more into nuance and the actuality of sustainable fishing. So, and thank you for all your resources. I am very excited. And lastly, what are some tips you would give to either someone aspiring to either do your job, like working in fisheries, or just in general, the marine science, marine communications field?
Yeah, I was thinking about this a lot today. And I was trying to think, like, what advice would I give people? Because I don't know that I ever like aspired to like end up in this position where I am, or whether like unconsciously, I don't know, I thought to turn down this road. But I would say like the kind of like general career advice that I find myself giving a lot is like to make your own opportunities. I think that like goes whether it's marine conservation or anything else. Like what I do because like I made a website one day and like started posting things on Instagram. Like I didn't wait for anybody to like tell me to do it or give me permission. I just did it. And like, it's like scary at first and you don't know if it's going to work. And like, you feel kind of stupid, like, because you're like, I think only my mom's reading this. but like, I don't know. You just got to like trust the process. And like, if you want something, just like, just do it. Don't wait for somebody to give you permission, like create your own opportunities and start working on the skills that you like want to develop, especially like if it is communications. Like I think with all these social media apps nowadays, like it's so easy to just to start a website, to like make a TikTok account or an Instagram and like start posting content. And like brands nowadays, I think this was another conversation in Clubhouse today, like there's a real need for like marketing and communications in this space. And so I think like if you just start doing that and like sharpen your skills and practice your skills and demonstrate like what you can do, like that's a really great place to start. And then the other like big piece of advice that I would say is like to network. Marine conservation is really like elusive and can be like almost secretive at times and feel like very exclusive. That's really not the case, but it's weird that, I don't know, a lot of people are like kind of like hush hush about some stuff. And so like, I appreciate like people like you who do what you do and like try to like make it transparent and like, here's how you can actually get in. And like, here's the reality of working in this field. But yeah, I would say like network, things like Clubhouse. Honestly, I avoided Clubhouse for so long. Cause I was like, another social media app, I can't do it. But it's been a really great place to network. So I would say, you know, use social media to network. There's so many like, with COVID now, so many like virtual conferences and webinars and things you can attend and like meet people in the chats and just, I don't know, put yourself out there. I get it. It's awkward. It's weird, but it pays off in the long run.
Should be like a networking class. Yeah, I definitely feel like that's like my biggest, I'm always telling people network, network, network. Like I have literally gotten everything because I networked and I knew people and I asked and I put myself out there and it is uncomfortable. I mean, I have social anxiety. Yeah. It's not like something I come naturally to. And it takes a lot to like get there, but sometimes it's like an email. You don't have to like walk up into someone's office, and it's way less intimidating than it definitely appears. And I think it's great advice. And I'm very happy you came on here today. I'm very happy to just talk about this documentary and that it is okay to criticize a film, but still maybe like it's part of the overarching theme that it gives and the awareness it can bring. That is a big part of the conversation I've been having, where I'm like, I'm not bashing. Like, I mean, I guess maybe some people consider what I do bashing the film, but it's being critical does not make you bad. It doesn't make you negative. It makes you, I think, open to conversations, to learning, because there's a lot I'm learning from conversations. There's a lot I'm learning about the fishing industry more so because the conversations that are coming from this, and I can respect it as a film. And I would probably still tell someone to just watch it, but I would always say be critical. Any documentary I watch, I know that there's bias, and I know that something in like, now I kind of know more that there may not be a great vetting process, especially with Netflix, to be very wary and I'm trying to bring more awareness to it with conversations like I had with Blackfish, where obviously it's a film people love, but it drives me crazy as someone who loves cetaceans that it is inaccurate with a lot of things it portrays, mm-hmm. and that it's okay. You can still like the message. You can still agree. Like you said, there are a lot of fisheries problems, but you can't mm-hmm. like broad stroke everything. And that's part of it. And exactly. So I appreciate that. I love the conversation and I'm very happy. And I will encourage everyone listening to also go and follow Emily and learn more about sustainable fishing. What just happened right there? Sustainable fishing. And
been on Clubhouse too long.
Honestly, I'm just like, I was listening to it in the shower today. Cause I was like, I want to hear what they're talking about, but I'm like, I need a shower. My voice needs a rest.
Yeah.
But basically, yeah, just follow and stay open to other views. And maybe you don't eat fish, or maybe you're vegan and you liked the film and you don't like everything we said, but I still think it's beneficial to follow people you disagree with. And there is a lot of great benefit from that. And thank you for coming on. And
thank you.
I will chat with everyone later.